parents before me, but they were the parents of God's choosing for me. God had a purpose and a plan in that. So even in the failure, and I would just encourage every person in this room, I understand some of you have been through some difficulties maybe, or some really difficult situations with your parents, but remember, God has a specific plan for that. Don't be bitter. If there's something in your heart where you say, Pastor, you know, I had this really bad upbringing, don't be bitter about that. I had someone said to me who was an adopted child, someone said, Pastor, I don't understand why my birth mother gave me up. Well, the Lord has a plan in that too. Understand that, and understand that God is in control, and understand, Mom, that as we study this briefly this morning, we're not expecting some level of perfection. But I want to ask you a question, not a trick question. I'll give you enough hints so no one embarrasses themselves, but I'm going to name a name, and I'm going to ask you if you've ever heard of this person. Now, let me give you this hint. You have never met this person, okay? You've never met them. They've never attended church. They didn't sit next to you on the bus somewhere, okay? You've never met them, because if you had met this person, you'd be the oldest person in the world. You've never met this person, okay? But has anyone ever heard, and be honest here, because I might quiz you. I might point you out and ask you. Has anyone ever heard of the, not just N, but the Anna Jarvis? Wow, hundreds of people in this room. Not one person raised their hand. The Anna Jarvis. No, I scared you is what I did. I think I've heard that name, someone said. In 1907 or 08, depending on who you read, Anna Jarvis had a memorial, a special memorial service for her mother in the little town of Grafton, West Virginia. Her memorial service, her mother had passed away. She had been a community servant for many years. She had formed ladies into leagues during the American Civil War. Anna's mother had actually tended to soldiers, both sides, Union and Confederate, without concern for what side. She had formed ladies into leagues that would help with that. Later, the ladies helped with poverty and issues in different communities. And so she was what we would call a conservative community activist. She was very active in charity work. She passed away, and about a year or so after her death, around 1907, 1908, Anna Jarvis, her daughter, decided to hold a special service in her memory at the time of her death. And so about a year or so after she'd passed away, this lady, Anna, decided to do this. Well, she got the idea as she had this special service to remember Mom. She thought, you know, it would be a wonderful thing if the nation had a special holiday set aside where we specifically would remember our mothers. And so Anna was successful with her memorial service for her mom, and so she decided that she would begin to campaign that the United States would adopt a particular day, the second Sunday in May, as Mother's Day. And she and her sister made this a matter of campaigning. Beginning about 1908 or so, they really pressed for this. Amazingly, they gained such a groundswell of support that by 1914, the second Sunday in May, this we celebrate today, Mother's Day became a nationally recognized holiday. And so these two ladies met with great victory in this, and here we celebrate Mother's Day today. However, there's kind of a strange twist to this, because by the 1920s, both Anna and her sister had become dismayed over the commercialization of their holiday. How many know what I'm talking about? These two older ladies now, by this time, they became dismayed about this matter, and they actually began to campaign against the commercialization of Mother's Day, the holiday that they wanted set aside specifically for Mom. And Anna, who is rightly credited as being the foundress of Mother's Day, she wrote these words. Now, I'm not trying to bother anyone by this or get you under some kind of conviction about this, but I gave me a chuckle when I read it. Anna, the foundress of Mother's Day, said, quote, "A printed card," meaning a greeting card, "A printed card means nothing except that you are too lazy to write to the woman who has done more for you than anyone in the world." This is the lady who founded Mother's Day. She said, "And candy, you take a box to Mother and then eat most of it yourself." Anna Jarvis never married. She had no children. And according to the New York Times obituary that appeared at the time of her death in 1948, she died in bitterness and poverty, having spent her family's entire fortune to combat the commercialization of her holiday. Interesting history. But in the spirit of Anna Jarvis, let's not worry so much about what we're giving on Mother's Day, but rather let's concentrate from Proverbs 31 on what Mom has given to us. Proverbs 31, verse number 10. Proverbs 31 and verse 10. The Bible says, "Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil." In other words, the word spoil means a windfall of profit. She's thrifty and careful with money. He doesn't have to win the lottery to support her. "She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeketh wool and flax and worketh willingly with her hands." That is a description of the domestic arts. "She is like the merchant's ship. She bringeth her food from afar. She riseth also while it is yet night, and giveth meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. She considereth a field and buyeth it. With the fruit of her hand she planteth a vineyard. She girdeth her loins with strength and strengtheneth her arms." This is a very strong woman. This is not a woman that would be fragile in any way. She is a woman with strength. She is a woman with great mental ability. "She girdeth her loins with strength, strengtheneth her arms." Verse 18. "She perceiveth that her merchandise, that which she produces in her cottage industry, is good. Her candle goeth not out by night. She layeth her hands to the spindle, and her hands hold the distaff," both of those dealing with weaving of fabric. "She stretcheth out her hand to the poor." She's generous, in other words. "Yea, she reacheth forth her hands unto the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She maketh herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. She maketh fine linen and selleth it, and delivereth girdles unto the merchant. Strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. She openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. She looketh well to the ways of her household, and eateth not the bread of idleness. Her children arise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praiseth her. Many daughters have done valiant, virtuously, pardon me, but thou excellest them all. Favor is deceitful, beauty is vain. But a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised." Characteristics of a virtuous woman. I said at the outset of the message that we're not expecting the ladies in this auditorium to be perfect in all of these. But we are expecting, and I think rightly so, that there should be these elements within our lives, and especially as mothers. And I was thinking when reading the passage through earlier this week and studying in preparation for the message, I was thinking about my own mom and how she reflected many of these characteristics. Now this morning, just briefly, I want to talk about that. And as I'm talking about that, I want you to think about your own mother. I'm going to ask you very specifically, don't think of any faults or failings that she may have had, because we're all human beings. Don't hold your mother to such an account that you say, "Well, Pastor Monty, she wasn't quite perfect, so she doesn't live up to the standard." By the way, for those of you who became Christians later, and perhaps your mom and dad were not Christians, I want to say something about that. God still gave you your parents to honor them. And if they weren't perfect because they didn't know the Lord as their Savior or didn't understand biblical precepts, that still doesn't give us a right to be critical or to be ugly toward the parents that our God has given to us. And I think in every person, this is true, there's something redeeming that can be said. I want to talk about some things, the gifts my mother gave to me, that are reflected in the passage. I see in verses 11 and 12 the idea of security. Security. My mother gave my brother and I, and then our older brother before us, who was 14 years our elder, she gave us a gift of security. Look at verse number 11. The Bible says of this woman who's virtuous, "The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her. He'll have no need of spoil." In other words, she doesn't spend all the money frivolously. "She will do him good," speaking of the husband, "she'll do him good and not evil all the days of her life." Well, you say, "Pastor Monty, that's talking about the virtuous woman in relationship to her husband." Yes, it directly is, but follow my thinking about this. When a woman is rightly related to her husband, there is a security that comes in the home that can be replaced by nothing else. We live in a day and time when people emphasize material possessions. And I'm certainly not against people advancing in life and paychecks increasing. I have no problem with that. I'm in favor of people who work hard, being rewarded for the work of their labor. I believe in all of those principles. But sometimes I think we get it backward. What our kids really need is not the latest video game or invention. It is not the latest technology, but it is a relationship that mom and dad have that lends security to the home. Security. It is not having the best gadget, but rather mom and dad so loving each other as to give an atmosphere of security where the children would never question their love one for another. Growing up, we didn't have all of the things that heart could desire. I had, I guess, what would be considered a lower middle class growing up. My dad was a public school teacher. After my mother became in a motherly way with my brother and I, my dad asked her to step aside from her job at Honeywell Corporation. She was a lead secretary there. She actually had security clearance to work on the Apollo spacecraft things as a secretary and handle the secure information. But my dad said, would you step aside from that? I want you to be a mother to her children. Now, of course, back in those days, they didn't know it was twins right away. My dad was so pleased to be having another baby a little later in life. Mom was in her late 30s at the time. Dad was so pleased and proud of that that he went out and bought all of the nicest of everything. Went to a furniture store. You know, now they had a little more money than they did when John had been born 14 years previous. And so bought the finest little dresser set and little, you know, crib and all of that. The best thing money could buy. Boy, Dad was pleased, and then a little while later, the news was that it was twins. Dad returned all of that and bought cheap junk for us. Dad was wise. He couldn't afford all of that. I remember the wisdom of my parents. Both my brother and I were born with a little bit of a physical birth defect that actually affected our legs. Our legs were turned a certain direction. And having gone to the doctor when we were just infants, the doctor said, you know, they're both going to need leg braces to sleep in so that they can have their legs straightened, so that their legs will be straight. They'll just have to sleep in these braces. That'll be all. And Dad asked the price of the braces, and I don't know what it was, but my dad, he frowned upon the price immediately. No, I'm not going to pay that. He said, let me see those braces. And the doctor showed him a sample of what these braces would be. And my dad examined the braces very carefully, memorizing really what the braces did and what the angles were and all of those things. And then my dad went home and took our baby shoes and nailed them to a board. At the same angles, he saw the braces. And whenever we would say, I don't remember this, I was an infant. Okay, I was an infant. Some of today's people say, well, that passed money, that was abusive. Oh, baloney. Okay, get over that. It wasn't. My dad wanted to fix the problem, but he was also economical. My parents were World War II kind of people. Their marriage was really, really wonderful. My mother showed a great loyalty to my dad. They were not Christian people, by the way. They never went to church together, never read the Bible. But I remember growing up, I never heard them exchange a cross word. They never argued in front of us. We never had a question. I remember when I was older, probably first, second grade, somewhere in there, hearing the word divorce for the first time. Some friends in the public school, someone had mentioned they were getting a divorce. I didn't even know what the word meant. And I had to inquire, and I asked, what does that mean? And Mom explained it. And to me, that was the strangest thing in the world, that a mom and dad, husband and wife, would split up. Well, why would they do that? Mom said, well, because some people can't get along. And it was still puzzling to me in my thinking. Do you know why that was? Because my parents, though they were not saved people at that time, later my mother got saved, but my parents, though not saved people, they understood the importance of security in the home. Years later, I asked, I said, Mom, I never heard you and Dad ever argue, fight, or fuss. I said, did you never disagree about anything? By the way, my mother's not a doormat by any stretch of the imagination. She's a very spunky and determined woman. My mom said, oh, no, no. She said, me and your dad had plenty of go-arounds, she said, but we'd never argue in front of you kids. That's a great principle. And it gave to the home a sense of security. The virtuous woman does that in relationship to her husband. The second thing that I want to emphasize is work ethic. Look at verse number 13. I love this because it describes this woman as being very industrious. She was not, in the parlance, a kept woman. By no means, she worked within the domestic arts and within the home and also had formed a cottage industry to bring in extra income. Verse 13, speaking of the woman, she seeketh wool and flax and works willingly with her hands. She was happy to do these things. She's like the merchant ships. She bringeth her food from afar. In other words, a reference to her cooking and her ability to provide good and nutritious and variety in meals. She riseth up also while it is yet night. In other words, she's an early riser. Giveth meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. She prepares things. Simply stated, she had a real work ethic. You know, that's a gift. Not only the security that our home provided, but watching my mother work was a gift. My mother was part of the greatest generation. She was a child of the Depression. When she was 18 years old, after graduating from high school up on the Iron Range of northern Minnesota, mother moved to Minneapolis. There were no good jobs on the Iron Range of northern Minnesota at that time, and she moved to Minneapolis. She stayed in a place called the Pillsbury Home for Girls, the Pillsbury family. You're all familiar with that, the Pillsbury Doughboy. Of course, their headquarters were in Minneapolis, and they were the chief of the milling concerns in a town that was largely built by the flour mills that were along the St. Anthony Falls area of Minneapolis, over northeast Minneapolis. The Pillsbury family understood that there would be a lot of girls from different places in the country. They are very philanthropic people, and they knew there'd be a lot of girls from different places in the countryside who would want to come to the city and work and earn money. But they also understood the evils of the city, and so my mother, along with some of her friends, moved into this Pillsbury Home for Girls, which really, though not particularly religious in its background, was a place where the girls would be protected. Mom described this. She said, we would go and work in a secretarial pool, maybe at one of the corporations, sometimes for some of the milling corporations, particularly for Pillsbury. And then we would have a curfew, and all of the girls would have to be back at a certain time. And she said there were ladies, adult ladies, who would check to make sure all the girls were back at a certain time and that they were safe, and they watched over them. This was a secular concern, but they showed genuine concern for all of this, and that was Mom's experience leaving home for the first time. She set in her life an example of work and hard work. I scarcely ever saw my mother idle. She didn't relax a lot. In the springtime, we would have a garden. The previous summer, she had planted parsnips. Does anyone know what those are? Kind of like turnips, but they taste better. They're parsnips. We'd leave those in the ground, and then in the early spring, once the snow was off the ground, we'd dig those up, and Mom would cook those. She always had a garden right outside the back door where she would plant vegetables. I learned that and learned to appreciate that. She's a very hard worker. It was one of the nicest gardens in the neighborhood, and she worked hard at that. She worked very diligently about the domestic arts, though Mom also knew how to work in the secular world and did so when that was necessary. She kept home very well. I remember something characteristic of my mother that really spoke to me about her work ethic, and it was this. We never had store-bought bread. We never had store-bought bread. Now, I know, but I'm reminiscing. Just because your mother did have store-bought bread doesn't make her evil. Just substandard, but no. Just kidding. But I remember as a boy what it was. We walked to school, by the way. Those were the years right before busing had occurred. We walked to school, and I remember as a boy walking to school and then coming home. And I knew when I came home from school, I knew that I'd walk through the door and I would smell that wonderful smell at least once a week of home-baked bread. Mother made 5 large loaves, and they're probably about this size. By the way, there's no such thing back then as a bread machine, was there? No such thing. Well, Pastor, what did people do? I don't know. I remember watching her have this big lump of stuff, and it was on a board, a wooden board. And I remember watching her punch that at some point. By the way, I think that's how she took out aggression. It's likely we have a lot of child abuse today because women are no longer baking bread by hand. Now they're punching the kid rather than punching the dough. I think I've just hit upon something. But Mom would punch that dough down with great vigor. Now I'm really beginning to wonder what she was thinking. This sweet Mother's Day sermon is turning a different direction. But Mom would punch that dough down with great vigor. And then I remember watching her. She would knead that dough and work that dough. And the wonderful smell of all of that. She was a hard worker. That took real effort, real work. Ladies in the room who know, have done that, understand that. After my dad's death, there was no word of complaint from my mother, no drama. She understood that she'd have to go back to work. There wasn't any real insurance money to speak of. It was eaten up in hospital bills, and she understood that that would be a necessity. She did go back to work. She went back to Honeywell Corporation, who they hired her eagerly, where she had worked some 12 or 14 years before. she also had some additional bill burdens because before my dad died, he'd been a public school teacher and he didn't like the direction of the inner city schools. We lived in the city and he told Mom to put us in some kind of quote unquote a religious school is what he said. And so Mom wanted to honor him at that, but that would mean additional bills that we had never had before. I look back on it now and Mom went to work, and by this time my brother and I were young in our teenage years. I look back on that now and someone says, Pastor, was that difficult? Well, Mom never made it so. She tried to be home about the time we got home from school or just a little bit thereafter. There was always a homemade meal either being prepared in process of preparation, a lot of crock pot cooking, I suppose, back then. But I look back on all of these things that I, as a kid, took for granted, and now I think, wow, my mother was a very hard worker. You ought to think about that and appreciate that. I sometimes feel like the moms in this room don't get appreciated for the level of effort that it takes. With wisdom sometimes, or with age sometimes, comes the wisdom of appreciation. And I certainly appreciate her for that. She was a very determined person. Mom was of German descent. Dad was of Italian descent. So that makes me Italian and German. I think that's a volatile combination. But she demonstrated a great work ethic and still does, by the way, to this day. 84 years old. She lives by herself. Yesterday in my conversation with her to wish her a happy Mother's Day, I said, Mom, what are you up to? She said, as soon as the weather gets nice around here, she says, I need to do the yard work. 84 years old. She lives by herself. I said, what kind of yard work? She said, well, your brother's coming over. Take the snow blower attachment off of the tractor. And she said, going to put on the riding deck, and I've got to get out there and ride and mow the lawn. And she's very determined. You say, well, Pastor, should someone else not be doing that? We have people that watch out for it when she can't. But you know what? When she can, she's not about to let anyone else do it. It's that kind of determination. She's a very strong person. My mom is mentally sharp. Look at verse 16. Drop down there. She considereth a field. Now, this is speaking of the virtuous woman. She considereth a field. In other words, we're talking about here a real estate transaction. She considereth a field and buyeth it. With the fruit of her hand, she planted a vineyard. She's not only good with real estate and understands what would be appropriate real estate for a field, but she knows something about horticulture. With the fruit of her hand, she planted it. She girded her loins with strength and strengtheneth her arms. She's strong. You know, you have to be strong to be a mother. You have to be strong. Now, I understand that not all ladies are constituted the same way, but it's not just all about physical strength. There's something about mental sharpness. In speaking to my mother yesterday, she said that the weather has been deplorable north of the Twin Cities in Forest Lake, Minnesota, where she lives. And she described it, and I thought, well, we don't have that much to complain about here in Indiana, though we've had kind of a rough spring. And I said, Mom, I said, what do you do all day? She lives by herself. You can only clean the house so much. With only one person, it doesn't get that dirty. And so I said, Mom, what do you do all day? And she said, well, this week, she said, I have read three full-length books, and I'm on a fourth. I said, are you kidding? And she said, no. She said, I get up in the morning, I have my coffee. She said, then I start reading. And she said, one day I read all day and completed a whole book in one day. And I mean, these are not small kiddie books. These are full-length books. She's 84 years old. I said, well, what else do you do, Mom? Oh, crossword puzzles. I love crossword puzzles, she said. She's got a sharp mind. Whenever I speak to her, she can impart that wisdom because of the sharpness of mind. There's something strong about that. When I was done talking on the phone, I thought, if the Lord gave me such sharpness of mind, I could continue as a preacher well into my 80s. Maybe repeating a few stories, but I do that anyway. Well into my 80s. This lady was physically strong. My mother was always that way. She loved walking and still attempts to, though she has some bionic parts that give her trouble every now and again. She loves to be outside. These are all wonderful characteristics. Mom has a high endurance. I think, by the way, ladies have a much higher endurance for pain. We can appreciate about that about our mothers. So, as Pastor Monty, my mother wasn't all she should have been. She did give birth to you. She had the character not to end that pregnancy. She did go through the valley of the shadow of death for you in the moments of childbirth. Pain indescribable and, frankly, unable to be endured by most, if not all, men. So she is physically strong. And I think about my mother's strength. I think of her emotional strength as well. One of the strongest ladies I've ever known emotionally. She wasn't a basket case. I think sometimes our society today has produced people that are weak. I'm talking about both men and women. I'm not specifically talking about women, but that people that are emotionally weak today, everything's such a big trial, the smallest little inconvenience that happens, and people kind of freak out over that. My mother was never that way. Dad's death, I saw her cry a couple times, of course, when Dad passed away. But most of Mom's crying, she did in private because she didn't want to upset my brother and I. I remember one time upstairs in my bedroom, and it was late at night, and I had awakened and had to go down to use the bathroom, and we only had one bathroom in the house, and I went down the stairs, and to use that bathroom, I had to walk by on the right side Mom's bedroom door, and the door was closed mostly, but just cracked open just a little bit, and very late at night, and I remember going into the bathroom, and she didn't hear me that I was up, and as I passed that door, and I remember this perfectly in my mind's eye as a young man, as I passed that door, and I heard my mother quietly weeping, and I knew what she was weeping about, but she didn't do that in front of her boys, because she wanted us to be strong. I remember a time after Dad's death where Mom got my brother and I together, and she had one of us under this arm and one under that arm, and when she squeezed us real close together, and she just said these words, she said, you know, she said, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. I can't tell you how I thank God for a mother like that. For in the face of what looked like a complete disaster, and she really knew the extent to how bad off things were, and she just hugged us real tight and said, it's going to be okay. If you've had the gift of a mom like that with that level of strength, God's given you a tremendous, tremendous gift. No one cares more, gives more, works harder or does more than Mom. Years ago, in the conflict of World War II, there was an American battleship that was under siege by the Japanese. And in the siege by the Japanese, the American battleship was able to fire some good rounds into some Japanese ships, and I think sank one and damaged another. But in the course of all of this, the American ship was damaged too badly, and the decision was made that the men would have to abandon ship. And they abandoned ship, of course, with life preservers, what was known as a life belt, that would keep them afloat in the water for a period of time, hopefully until rescue could come. And a man slipped from the edge of the ship, planned the evacuation by the captain. One of the men stepped over and jumped off of the ship, and he used his life belt to keep him afloat, and he floated on that for some time, and then another American vessel picked him up, and he was rescued. He was one of 500 that were rescued that day. That other American vessel came under siege and also was to the point where it would sink, and the captain had attempted to beach the vessel on a piece of land that was nearby. That didn't work very well, and so once again, all of the crew was off of the second vessel. Those who had been rescued were out in the water once again, and this man is hugging closely to his little life belt, is what we would call a life vest today, hugging closely to his life belt or life vest. Finally, he was rescued along with a number of others. And he felt very fortunate to have been spared two overboard commands, abandoned ship commands. Well, later he got to look at that little life belt that had kept him up in the stormy seas and had preserved his life. And he looked at all of the stitching on it. He was studying it over to remember this small little thing had saved his life, not just one time, but had saved his life twice. He looked over the material, and he noticed there was a tag. It was manufactured by the Firestone Corporation, famous for, of course, tires today and recalls. But the Firestone Corporation had manufactured this life vest. And he looked at the life vest, and his friends had one as well, and there was a number that was printed on the life vest. Firestone was interesting because his mom had worked at the Firestone Corporation during those war years. He looked at the number on the vest and thought, that's interesting. And his friends had numbers, and all the numbers were different. Later when he got home, he said to his mom, he said, Mom, I was wearing a life vest. He said, and it was manufactured by Firestone. She said, oh, yes, I'm very familiar. She said, we made those. And he said, well, what's that number? There's an identification number. Every one of them was different. They said, well, Firestone wanted us to be fully responsible for our part of the war effort. And she said, so those numbers represented the workers who made that vest and were responsible for its integrity. And the man said, Mom, do you remember your number? And she said, yes. She said, I had it printed on thousands of those. She said her number. She rattled it off. And it was the number that matched his vest. Mom does more than we could ever, ever imagine. Today, take the time to thank God for your mother. Let's bow in prayer. Father, thank you for moms today. We love you so much for the great high standard set in the Bible. We don't expect, Lord, that anyone would be perfect, but we do see in Scripture a pattern that we can follow. I thank you, Lord, this morning for the remembrance of my own mother. I pray that folks in this room today would take some time to both think and to thank, for those of us whose mothers are still here, to thank them for their sacrifice, for their influence, for things, Lord, that we took for granted, maybe never noticed, and only with age and experience do we realize how much our mom sacrificed to bring us along in life. Give us that appreciation. And Father, for every mom here, I pray your special blessing upon them. May the Spirit of God give them special grace. For our new moms, that you would help them to rear their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, as well as to follow the biblical precept. Thank you for all of your love. I pray you'll speak to every heart. Let's stand together.